gonna rock these shades, gonna scream my name, make you shout now, honey, gonna make you shout.
Whether you're an independent artist looking to take their career to the next level, or you're a fan that just loves to discover new artists and new original music, Making a Scene has exactly what you're looking for. For the indie artist, we have articles on music business, gear reviews, recording techniques, and interviews with industry professionals. For the fan, we introduce you to new artists every day with our in-depth artist interviews and insightful CD reviews. Nobody gives you more. Making a Scene truly is the number one resource for the indie artist and the fans that love them. Go to makingascene.org and become part of the indie revolution. And now, here's a double shot from our featured artist today, Rigby Summer. And stay tuned for that interview. It comes up right after these songs.
Come on, baby, let's just run away. Take me to a better place. Maybe some lovely place like Kentucky. When we met, how could I forget? Cherry blossoms springing up new life. Now leaves are turning green and brown. Oh, the leaves, they're falling down. What better time to take me for a drive? So come on, baby, take me for a ride. I'll sit on the passenger side and you can sing your song. Well, in my mind, as we drive down 65, autumn breezes blowing through our hair. At Bowling Green, we'll hang a right, and we'll start our new life. You'll steal a kiss because we're almost there. Think you can hide from me? It's wishful thinking, you will see. I know you love me like those games you play. Be it New York or LA, in New York, in LA. The Great Plains, Tampa, I love you all the same. You can try to hide, but there's no hideaway in New York, in LA, in New York, in LA. So give it up, baby, it's more than certain. step on every street is just the rhythm of my heartbeat. I know you love me, but running's just your way. I know your hopes and I know your fears. I know the story that brought you here. There's nothing left for us to do or say. You're in New York, I'm in L.A. So give it up, baby. It's more than certain, not a maybe, that I'll find you. So give it up, baby. And tell me, tell me, tell me. Tell me that you need a space. Well, I'm just waiting for the day. To give it up, baby. Is it LA? Is it New York? Is it LA?
And that was Rigby Summer from her brand new release, and we got Rigby on the line right now. Hey Rigby, how you doing?
Hey, Richie, I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. I'm trying to stay out of trouble. It's not one of my many talents, but I put an effort in.
It's not mine either.
Now, this is the first time you've come on our show, and we always give our fans an opportunity to get to know who you are as an artist. And the best way to do that is by your journey, where you came from. So give us the story of Rigby Summer.
Oh, wow. That's a big story. So I'm going to try to give you the Reader's Digest version. I grew up in a fairly musical family. And if I'm being honest, like, even when I was a little kid, I kind of always dreamed of performing. I loved, as a elementary school student, instead of listening to like current pop music, I used to go home after school and sing along to the Shirelles and like imagine what it might have been like to have like been one of the Supremes. I loved all of those great singers, and deep down I always wanted to make music. I always wanted to sing. I always loved telling stories, but it took really a lot of twists and turns in life before I really started owning that. And even once I did, through more life circumstances, I actually, I had what I call my false start in my 20s, and then thought getting married to a certain person was a good idea. As a result, stopped playing music for about 5 or 6 years. But 4 years ago in 2017, some opportunities to start performing music again came my way. At the same time that marriage was coming to an end, and it was a very poetic and very poetic story, and a very soft place for me to land when I was going through what was personally like one of the hardest things I've ever gone through in my life, was in this very beautiful way. Also, the same time that everything that I had ever dreamed of started coming into my life, and so it really. It's part of why on a lot of my EP that we did last fall, which is not what we're going to talk about today, and in a lot of my social media posts and things, you'll see the Albert Camus quote that says, "It was in the midst of winter I found within me an invincible summer," because that's really kind of the linchpin of music for me, and of this whole journey of getting to share these songs with other people, like, really hinges on on that, like helping people find that invincible summer, even in dark times.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about this new release. When you were putting this one together, what were your goals for this?
Well, it's funny, that shifted a little bit over time. When I finally settled on a producer, mixer, engineer person to help me, and we started figuring out what we were going to do for this first project of mine, we started out planning to do just kind of an archival record, me plus my guitar, because I've been writing for a really long time, but haven't released any of it officially. So I had all of these old songs that I really felt like deserved to, I joke about like sending them off to college, like these babies that I'd brought along, and like they all deserve to be out. So which ones should be on this record? And instead of focusing on new material, we were kind of looking to archive old stuff to get it out, put away, so we could make way for the new stuff. But right as we started the process, the last two songs on the record are actually the newest songs that I had written when we started working in earnest, and they gave shape to the record. And those songs were Michigan and Gibson Guitar, their names. And on Michigan is a song that I wrote that gave... basically made me realize that the concept was going to be geography, which was a concept that I had held on to for a long time, that I was interested in possibly compiling some of my play songs into a geography record. And then right after that, I wrote Gibson Guitar, which ended up the week that we had planned to sit down and just track like 10 of these old songs and call it good, like maybe put a little bit of pedal steel or something behind me and my guitar. We marked out this week for that, but I had finished writing Gibson Guitar the night before I went to work with Kyle Reed, my producer, and we were going to work in earnest that week. And I showed up at the studio and he was like, well, where are we going to start today? And I said, well, before we start, I kind of sheepishly said, I wrote a new song last night. And he said, well, let's hear it. So I played it for him, and he got a side eye, looked at me when I finished playing it, and I looked at him, and he's like, that's going on the record, right? And I said, I think it has to. So then he was like, well, where should we start today? And I said, do you want to start with the new one? And he's like, I want to start with the new one. And so what ended up happening is we went from just doing this little acoustic thing to like that song is kind of what brought us together in this creative process. And like those few days that we were supposed to track like 10 songs, we spent almost all the time working on Gibson Guitar, at least for the first 2 days. And it felt like a film montage because, you know, we were just experimenting with all these different sounds and like seeing what kinds of stuff we could come up with. We were working in his home studio and, you know, putting weird ooze behind things and gathered around like the two of us around the same microphone. I mean, it just felt like something from a movie, and the song just took on a life of its own. And when we came to sort of a finished product with it, we both realized, I think, oh my gosh, like we're capable of doing so much more in this little studio than just an archival record. And suddenly it became like a fully produced affair. Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about that process of songwriting. You know, every writer can look back at their journey and identify certain artists that inspired them to write. Mm. What were some of the artists that inspired you to become a songwriter?
Oh gosh. Well, It's easy to say based on the stories I've already told you about my early musical upbringing of listening to the oldies station. I didn't realize until much later in life that obviously Carole King was like this huge influence, because I didn't realize till I was older that she had written so many of these like girl group songs that I loved. So Carole King, I think she's also a songwriter that made me realize, like that you can write songs and perform them yourself, but if you write really good songs, like sometimes someone else takes them and does something totally different with them. That is also the beauty of like creating music, because it takes on its own life once you put it out into the world, you know? So Carole King early on, whether I knew it or not, then in like my teen years, I adored Mary Chapin Carpenter. Like I wanted to be Mary Chapin Carpenter when I was 15. I had a family friend, my mom's best friend, ripped her CDs onto tapes for me because I'm old enough that I didn't have a CD player when I was a younger kid. And so she was ripping all these CDs onto tapes for me, and I like knew the Mary Chapin Carpenter catalog front to back. I knew all the songs by heart, and just I like dreamed of meeting her and like learning to write songs like her. So those are two of my earliest influences, and from there it went on to like Katie Herzig, Ingrid Michaelson, Brandi Carlile. Like those are women that in my 20s like made me want to write music even more. And then as I've been really lucky to have a lot of songwriter friends put in my path, and a lot of them who really just listening to their creation made me want to write, like listen to their stuff and be like, okay, I want to go home and do that now.
Okay. Now, when you sit down to write a song, you know, every writer has their way of tapping into the muse. You know, some writers are very structured, like the Nashville mentality, where, you know, they have writing days and writing times, and, you know, they make appointments to write with other writers. And some are collectors. They collect bits and pieces, and they lay it out, and there's a song there. Or they're inspirational. What's kind of your process that allows you to tap into the muse?
In most of my life, I am a collector, and I'm becoming more and more of a collector, especially as I've become so much busier with the business side of things the last couple of years, and with all of these backlog of songs that I am needing to get out into the world, I've really done a lot of idea collecting. The last year or so especially, it's been hard for me to just sit down and write a song. But the closest I've been to that more, like slightly more rigid structure to songwriting is a huge and important thing for me, and even some of the songs on this record came from being a part of February Album Writing Month, which is an online community of people all over the world who set a goal for themselves to write 14 songs in the month of February. And it just gets you, it makes you sit down and do the thing. And some of the songs you come up with aren't necessarily keepers or like real bangers, but like some of my best songs have been written during songwriting challenges and collaborations during February Album Writing Month, which is a little bit more structured, and we operate a lot on prompts and challenges and that sort of thing. So, yeah.
No, that's actually a good way to kind of hone your craft is to get together with other writers. And, you know, the internet and social media is a great way to do that. Now, writing lyrics is a very structured process. You've got stories, continuity, meter, rhyme, all those things. And it's a certain part of the brain. But melody's a little different. It's a different part of the brain that finds melodies. Some artists like to work off grooves. Others like to work off of chord structures. What is your process that allows you to find your melodies?
Gosh, you know, that's a really funny thing for me because I don't feel like it strikes the same way every time for me. And the last few years, my process has been changing. I've historically been a pretty lazy songwriter, and I've been really, really lucky in that a lot of what I think are my best songs, this is part of what compels me to like want to make sure these songs get into the world, is that it has felt like a very spiritual process for me, where I often have felt like I just receive the songs. Like there are several songs, including one of the songs on this record called Delaware, California. It's one of the songs that I wrote that it's like I just sat down, I had one line, you can go, I don't care, all the way to Delaware. And I don't know where it all came from. I'm just holding my guitar, and it was like I already knew the song, and the whole thing just kind of like came out of me. I've been very lucky to have that happen a lot, and it's part of why I'm trying to develop more discipline and intention in my songwriting, because you don't get better by just relying on the low-hanging fruit all the time. But the place in the process that I've been more lately is I actually have been receiving a lot of melodies. Like, I'm not sure in this next part of my life, like, what I'm supposed to be saying yet. I haven't received the message. I feel like my days of, like, writing sad, forlorn love songs are maybe coming to a close, and I want to, like, deepen my messaging, but I don't know what it is yet. But I'm receiving a lot of melodies, and so I'm like, I'll be driving down the road, like, humming stuff into my voice notes, or I'll get up and grab my guitar if I think I know what the chords are for whatever this thing is, and I'll put a lick, I'll put a riff in, to where I have a feeling sometime next winter I think I'm going to end up sitting down and, like, just going through all of these melodies and saying, all right, it's time to make some magic happen.
Okay. Now, you mentioned you used a voice memo on your phone mm-hmm. to capture those inspirational ideas. You know, and I grew up in an era where that wasn't available, and I can't tell you how many songs I've lost over the years.
Mm-hmm.
But technology has brought a lot of tools to the songwriter's table. You know, there are online rhyming dictionaries and thesaurus and so on and so forth. What are some of the tools that you use as a songwriter that technology has brought you?
Well, you know, a lot of the stuff that I've already talked about, like even the February album writing month, it's just in a time when I wasn't performing and felt like music, like I had the music was never going to be a thing for me career-wise in my life. Like, I had this group of people all over the world that I was writing songs with every February, and that couldn't have existed even 10 years before when I started doing it, you know? The voice notes, for sure, but I, like, to answer your question kind of in reverse, if I can, something that I still rely on if for some reason I can't do that is I don't like saying, oh, this sounds just like blah, 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 but if I realize that there's some tiny part of a melody that sounds like another song or, like, is similar to another groove, I will tell myself, okay, when you, like, until you can get back to your tools, like, remember, it's a cross between this and this. I wrote a song on an airplane once. Wrote the whole song. I had the lyrics and everything come out, and as I wrote the lyrics, I was hearing the groove, but I had no place to figure it out, and so I had to sit there and think, okay, what does this sound like it could be? And I was like, this is a marriage of Lucinda Williams, Righteously, plus Robert Palmer, Addicted to Love. And, like, that's how I kept the groove in my head until I got home and could sing it into something. So
okay.
It's kind of funny.
Now, let's talk about that moment where you have to, you know, determine when the song is finished, because you can write the hell out of a song, you know, and actually do more harm than good. What do you do to determine that moment when the song is done?
Yeah, you know, that is a really interesting question. To some of the co-writes I've had, this has been a point of dissension between us, because I like to err on the side of simplicity in my songwriting if I can. And there have been some folks that I've written with that I have a friend that sometimes just sends me sends me chords or, like, a basic idea that he's having trouble getting through it. And so he did that one time, and I literally, like, wrote the verses exactly how I thought the story should be told. And when he sent it back with the next iteration, he had doubled the length of both verses, like, added more. And I'm like, no, you're telling too much of the story. So I try to be willing to take the simpler route whenever possible. And it's a hard thing to know sometimes, like, when is it really done? But I think because I've been a bit of a storyteller my whole life, like I said, even when I was a kid, being a storyteller. I was like the kid who came home from school and had like, I had to tell the news of the day, right? I look at what I'm trying to say in the song and say, have I said it sufficiently, and have I left mm-hmm. just enough out that someone else can adopt it and put their own story into it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes very much sense.
And on the few times that I'm like, no, I really think this song needs like one more thing, or maybe it needs a bridge and I don't know, I'm not sure where to take it. Like, I have a couple friends that I call on to help me with that. And that's actually New York or LA, which is one of my favorite tracks on this record. It was a total collaboration. It's part of the lyrics came from, and the basis of the song came from a guy who does February Album Writing Month every year who posted lyrics. He lives in Austria and I've never met him, but we have an internet friendship. And I put the whole thing together, but I felt like in order to change the message to what I wanted this song to be saying, it needed something. And my friend Jeff Brown was visiting at the time, and he was like, you need a bridge. And I was like, I'm not sure where to take the bridge. So he gave me the chords. He was like, you could go to this alternate structure here for the bridge to separate things out. And so he gave me the chords. I wrote the words to fit the chords that he gave me for the bridge, and it tied the whole thing together, put a bow on it. And I was like, I think we just wrote a slamming song. This is fantastic.
All right. Well, now tell me a little bit about the lineup on this. Who's playing on it?
Yeah, so the star of the show, in my opinion, is my producer, Kyle Reed, who is just like a wizard. He is just a magician and a wizard, and he was just starting to produce other people's work when we started working together. Which was part of why we got to do so many, like, just so much kind of experimenting in the studio to kind of figure out what sounds were possible, because he was in a big learning process at that time. But he had been recording his own stuff for years, and besides being like a very, I don't like saying gearhead, but I don't know how else to like actually communicate it. Like he rebuilds, like he buys things off of Craigslist, like pieces of gear that people think are done for, and he like refurbishes them and like makes things work together, takes parts and puts them together. Like he just loves all of the technical side of the craft, but then he is just a phenomenal guitarist and pedal steel player, and is one of the loveliest humans that a person could hope to meet. And so he's friends with everybody. So thanks to him, besides his beautiful playing and his mind hearing music, I think very similarly to how I do, because I could tell him, oh, on this song, I think I'm hearing this, but I don't feel like I'm communicating it well. And he'd say, oh, you mean something like this? And he'd do a little riff, and I'd say, that's exactly what's been living in my head for 5 years with this song. So besides having all of that, like, he then just is friends with everybody because he's a great guy. And so thanks to him, like, one of my favorite bass players in Oklahoma, David Leach, he just, like, made a call, and David came over and put bass on my record. And when he said, I'm going to see if Dave's in town, I was like, do you mean Dave Leach? Like, you're going to call Dave Leach to come work on my record? Are you kidding me? Yes, call Dave. And so David Leach does all the bass on the record. Let's see, who else do we have? We've got Steve on drums, some of the percussion. I know Kyle programs some of the percussion as well. One of my best friends, Shandy Allen, aka Shandy Lane, she put a lot of the harmonies down, the ones that aren't my own harmonies. Oh gosh, Louise Goldberg from Miss Brown to You, she came in and put some keys on Michigan and Buy Me a Piano. Matt Majorkurth plays cello on two of the tracks and just did a phenomenal phenomenal job with that. That is a story in and of itself. My friend Nick Gudra put down some fiddle on Kentucky and also some background vocals. Gosh, now you got me freaked out. I think I should have the liner notes in front of me while I'm saying this, huh? As if I don't have my own CD right next to me. But another one of the, like, to me, like crowning glories on this is the song Michigan, which was inspired by a trip to Michigan for a Folk Alliance conference where I made friends with all of these incredible folk musicians in Michigan and just felt, like, wrapped in love and new friendship there. I wrote that song on the way back from that trip and ultimately had this chorus of friends from all over the country, many of whom were some of those Michigan musicians who put the chorus of O's, this oh, on the end. And so the song kind of builds, and then I'm going to, like, just totally spoil it for you now.
That's okay.
Then this chorus of people comes in, and the first time I heard the mix with everybody's vocals dropped in there, I got goosebumps and almost started crying, because it's like all of these friends of mine, and at different times, like he kind of, like, wove their voices, like, messed with the volume so that at different times different people's voices stick out more. And so during this chorus, I can hear some of the specific voices of my friends, and it's just a really powerful moment on the record right before we close it out. So, yeah, it looks like I actually remembered everybody.
Okay.
Yeah. So David Leach on bass, Kyle, my producer, does pedal steel, lead guitar, organ, banjo. Nick Gedra does some mandolin and fiddle, Shandy on background vocals, Steve Boaz does percussion, Matt Majorkurth on cello, and then Louise Goldberg on accordion and piano, Johnny Carlton does the second vocal on New York or LA. And I forgot, Andy Baker, one of my musician friends in Michigan, who sang on that chorus. When he listened, he was like, well, I hope you don't mind, but I thought I'd go ahead and just run a dobro track for you, too. So if you like this dobro track, you can keep it. If not, you know, I don't care. I just was having fun. So, of course, we had to keep the dobro on there. So the dobro on Michigan is from Andy Baker.
Okay. Now, let's let's talk a little bit about getting it out there and creating your team. Yeah. And you're working with Adam Dawson from Broken Jukebox Media. Tell me a little bit about that relationship.
Well, it's a new relationship. This is the first time that I have, like, really hired anybody to, like, join my team. This is the first time I have a team. So just like choosing, other than my producer, of course, just like choosing my producer took a long time. Like, it took a long time, and interviewing several people who I really loved and was really interested in working with, but I just didn't quite feel like this is where I needed to pull the trigger. And then I got connected with Adam through our mutual friend Rob Ellen, who does promotions in the UK, who had already planned to hire to do UK promo for me. And when I told him, you know, I'm trying to figure out, do I do radio promotion? Do I do publicity? Do I do both? Like, money doesn't grow on trees. Where should I invest? And he was like, you should talk to my friend Adam Dawson. And so he got us connected. And so Adam and I have just been working together, like, since the summer, basically. And so far it's been, if nothing else, just like a massive relief, because coming up on releasing my first record, like, there's this snowball of work that has to be done. And I'm trying to get back on the road touring now that in a lot of places, and a lot of the places that I tour a lot, like Wyoming and Montana, things have been opening up. So it's been really stressful planning and executing those tours. And I finally realized, well, no wonder it's so stressful. Like, you haven't ever been trying to release music and run a pre-order campaign and while also booking your own tour and advancing your own tour and doing all the things. So there was this huge weight lifted the last week of July, right before I left for my first tour since the pandemic, where my CDs had come in. And, of course, I just spent all of this money to buy all of these CDs, and we repackaged them and sent one box across the pond to Rob in the UK. And in that same day, we sent a big box to Adam, sent it off to Ohio. And, like, I just felt like the weight of all 50 pounds of those boxes, like, coming off my chest, because I was like, this is work that I knew needed to be done, that I thought I had to do myself because I'm an independent musician, doggone it, and I'm DIY, doggone it. But realizing, like, this is their specialty, and they have the contacts, and they have the, you know, a plan. Like, they have all of the, like, this is their job to go do this. And I'm employing someone else who appreciates having work, right? And getting third party assistance and credibility by having somebody that actually wants to work with me. And it's weeks of work that I would have had to do myself that I don't have time to do. And so it was such a profound moment for me, like, realizing that, like, you can be independent and still be growing your team. And you have to, because you can't do this. Nobody does this by yourself, you know, like,
right.
Whether you have a team of fans that, like, really rally around you and a street team and all of that, like, none of us can do this without a village. So I'm so excited and happy to have him in my village, because these are all things. I'm enough of a business and spreadsheet nerd that I get kind of excited about doing a lot of this stuff, but, like, it detracts, it gets me farther away from being able to get back to writing again, you know? And actually just producing my art the way I'd like to be doing it. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about the music industry. Mm-hmm. We've been in the digital revolution now for over 20 years. And it has redefined the music industry several times over. And the consumer now has embraced streaming as a way to consume music. And the result of that is that they no longer look at recorded music as a product. You know, I grew up in an era where it was a very tactile experience. You went out, you bought an album or, you know, a tape. And that was, you know, you had something that you owned. You had it in your hands and you could play it and listen to it at your whim. But today you can listen to pretty much everything that's been recorded in the last 100 years at a flick of a finger without, you know, a direct cost. How has this shift in the consumer's perception of recorded music affected you as an artist?
Well, this is another way that I feel like things are happening, like, right on time for me. Because initially, my first foray into music business was helping other people with their booking, and I was terrible at it, and I was miserable because I wanted to be making my music, me making music myself. But it was before this whole streaming revolution happened, and, like, the things I learned, like, there are certain things that I learned about the nature of music business that have helped me, but a lot of it is completely obsolete now, because we were still sending out CDs to bookers and, like, doing a lot of stuff by phone, and, like, it was definitely more of the old guard. And those folks that I kind of stayed friends with, I watched them kind of struggle to figure out how to adjust as things changed in the last 10 to 15 years. And my return to music has happened kind of after a lot of that shift has happened. And so I will own that I haven't had to walk through it the way some of my artist friends have. So it's allowed me to realize that, number one, pursuing my career completely independently to start, the way that I have been able to do it and the way that I've been able to grow so quickly in the last 4 years could not have happened in the same way, like, even 10 years ago. Like, it is only possible because of all the tools that we have now. And I choose to see the streaming and all of the digital media and the social media and all of that as tools for my business instead of complaining about, you know, a lot of folks want to really complain a lot about this shift and how much it's hurt them. But I see it as like an enormous opportunity. And a lot of people hear the statistics about, I don't even remember what it is, and I don't like repeating it, like how many thousands of songs are released on Spotify every day, and see it as like this big overwhelming barrier, but it's not all great stuff. Like, yeah, there's a lot out there, but like, there's never been a time in music business history where you could just learn how to do what you do, do it really well, be who you are, and find your audience as readily as you can right now. And so I think it's a really exciting time to be in the industry and to be pursuing a career in music, because there's so fewer gatekeepers now. You know, the bands that I grew up loving, there were a lot of gatekeepers that determined that they were what got heard. And so I don't know. I think it's an exciting time.
Well, yeah, it definitely is. And, you know, I read an article on not too long ago about how the industry is now going to shift again. That during COVID, what happened was that a lot of independent artists had to stay connected to their fans. They had to figure a way of not only not losing their fan base, but also create revenue streams and be able to somehow compensate for not going out on tour and not doing the things that, you know, is the job of musician, a touring musician. Mm-hmm. And the result of that is that these artists became part of this world of content creation, whether it was live streaming or they had music videos, they were creating content on social media, doing TikTok. But all in all, it was a direct connection to their fans. You know, when they did a live stream, the fans could comment, ask for songs and things like that. And really, as much as you can't replace a live show, it gave the fan a taste of being connected to the artist at another level. You know what I mean? Almost some that I've talked to who have really become good at it have almost created a reality show mentality around their brand. You know what I mean? And people gravitate to that pseudo celebrity. Mm-hmm. What do you think that is, as far as the possibility that may be the next platform where all of these things like Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and Spotify all seem to combine into a mega platform that allows artists and fans to connect? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, so which part of that is the question you have for me? I'm sorry. I want to make sure I answer what you want to know.
My question is what do you think of that as the future? Do you think that's where we're going?
You know, I think to a degree, yes. I think that's fairly accurate. I am going to be honest in that my response to all of that when the pandemic started was, I saw pretty quickly, within like maybe a week or two of the shutdown where I live in Oklahoma, I had a lot of people who were already telling me, oh, you should just stream. You should just stream. And my response was, well, there are, like, we're like 1 or 2 weeks in, and there's already this huge pivot where that's what everyone is doing. And I am just contentious enough that, like, if everyone else is doing it, what am I going to do to be different? And my response to that, in at least in pandemic times, was to say, I'm not going to hop on that wagon immediately, because there are already people who are really good at that, or who have a team that's really good at it to kind of help them go that route and, you know, do a broadcast a day at noon or whatever, which is rad for those people. And a lot of friends I know made it work, but it didn't feel aligned for me. And so I personally haven't gone that route. I'm not saying that I'm against content creation or like doing videos. It's just with preparing to release this first record, I have already had such a huge learning curve and so many things that I needed to learn business-wise, that I was like, spending time and money, like buying new interfaces and buying new cameras and all of this stuff, it was not staying in my lane. So I first of all, kind of was willing to take the time to just rest during the pandemic, because I needed it. And then as I started to evaluate, all right, well, this is going to pass eventually, so what do I want things to look like on the other side for me? I did a lot of deep diving into like what I felt like I'm good at. Because below the surface of all of that, like the content creation engine and like the building the reality show brand and all of that, no matter what level you're doing it at, the people who are most successful at it know what part of this creator life they're good at, and that's what they're presenting. They are figuring out what their thing is, and that's what they are focused on. So whether you're doing a video every day, a video every week, a video every month, the people who are the most successful content creators and have the most successful brands know who they are, and they make that, like, they build everything around, this is what I'm good at, and this is who I am, and I'm going to be fully who I am, and the people who are looking for that are going to come to me. Whether they realize it or not, some people are very naturally good at that, you know? But, so that's why I do agree that's the direction things are likely going, but my strategy for evaluating that is still just to always think first about, am I doing this because it's what everyone else says I should be doing or what everyone else is doing? Or is this in alignment with who I am as an artist and what I'm trying to attract and what I'm trying to be in, and if you want to call it my brand or whatever. But does that make sense?
Yes, makes very much sense. Now, as we move into the future, of course, we're going to get back to live music. You had mentioned that certain areas are opening up now, but a lot of artists are running into challenges as they start to go out and find their, you know, their voice and going out and playing live again. What are some of the challenges that you're facing right now?
Well, you know, the obvious one is that there are some places that I really loved playing that just don't exist anymore. And every time that I have tried to figure out how to dip my toe back into booking, especially like booking where I live closer to home, is one thing because I kind of have an idea what the sentiments are, like what's open, how open people are to going out. Like I know what it feels like where I live, but I also know that's very different from how it feels in other places. Like it's very different from what my musician friends on the East Coast are experiencing, or the West Coast, or my friends in Wyoming, or my friends in Colorado. I mean, just between Wyoming and Colorado, there's a really different atmosphere around reopening and how things are handled. And so it's been a challenge to kind of navigate how to do this communication and how to send the email or make the call. That's like, you know, the underlying tension is like, hey, I'm hoping you're still open. I'm hoping you still have a live music program. Like, and I don't know how they, like, what's the atmosphere there? Like, trying to navigate that conversation to figure out what options are even for booking, because I like, touring is my jam. And a lot of people just want to create their music or create their videos or create whatever. They're not interested in touring. I love the road. Not everybody loves it. I love the road. And so it's been really important, but also really difficult for me to kind of navigate those, like, how to handle that delicately, like, so that they don't come off as tone deaf. But it's like, if there is a backyard or a like, whatever people are comfortable with, like, if there's a place to play, I want to be there doing the thing with people again, you know? So yep. That's been the hardest thing, is just how to navigate that so that you're sensitive to how different it can be in different regions, but you're ready to take the opportunity if it's there. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, I really appreciate you coming on the show and talking with us. And we're going to give out there a double shot from your new release. You guys are going to love this. Turn it up loud. Screw the neighbors. We're going to have some fun.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Richie. This has been really lovely talking to you.
It's been a pleasure.
Put this town in a rear view mirror. I'm gonna leave and never look back. They say the distance makes things clearer. Gotta get this life together while there's still time left to grow. There's a great big world beyond that highway. There's so much more. Forever. The this place where my family planted seed. But these roots can't grow on rocky soil.
gonna rock the shade. Gonna scream my name. Make you shout now, honey. Gonna make you shout.
Whether you're an independent artist looking to take their career to the next level, or you're a fan that just loves to discover new artists and new original music, Making a Scene has exactly what you're looking for. For the indie artist, we have articles on music business, gear reviews, recording techniques, and interviews with industry professionals. For the fan, we introduce you to new artists every day with our in-depth artist interviews and insightful CD reviews. Nobody gives you more. Making a Scene truly is the number one resource for the indie artist and the fans that love them. Go to makingascene.org and become part of the indie revolution.
Shout now, honey.